Hello and welcome to the Radioactive Ramblings podcast, a show where we are going to be covering Fallout on Amazon Prime Video. I am one of your co-hosts, Aaron.
And I'm your other co-host, Chase. Today we are going to be wrapping up this season of Fallout. First, we're going to be starting with some brief announcements on the future of our show before moving on to a section with listener feedback. Finally, we'll be giving our last thoughts, theories, and hopes for this season. Spoilers will be on the table for our feedback section, as well as our final thoughts.
All right, let's get right into some quick announcements before we get to the main meat of the podcast. So, Chase, we are going to be continuing on with Radioactive Ramblings after Fallout is over in this final episode.
Yeah, the next thing we're going to cover is review of Season 2 of Invincible, since we both greatly enjoyed Invincible. We think reviewing Season 1 is a little far off the mark. It's been a while since Season 1 is out, but Season 2 finished not too long ago, so we think in 2 episodes or so we can cover that.
And after that, May is looking like a pretty slow month in terms of shows and movies that are going to be coming out, so we'll likely be going through some media that we've enjoyed over the past little while that maybe we didn't get a chance to cover because we've just started podcasting, or possibly talk about some video games, you know, some other things like that. So we're going to be talking a little bit more about that. Coming soon after that, The Boys Season 4 is coming, and we plan on doing episode coverage for that show. We'll be doing weekly episodes to be a sort of companion to The Boys Season 4. Stay tuned for some more info on that as we get closer to the release date of The Boys.
I know during May, since it's kind of dry, thinking maybe you wanted to do some lore coverage of Elden Ring. Maybe that might be something we would do.
Yeah, absolutely. That was on the list of things that we might be able to do. And also in June, the Elden Ring DLC is coming out. So I feel like now would be a pretty good time to start doing some lore coverage for that. And I don't know if this is something you would be interested in, but possibly doing like a Fallout lore series, or maybe if you're not interested in doing that, I could do possibly like a standalone episode or two with some Fallout lore. I don't know how much people want to hear me talking to the microphone by myself, though.
I mean, I'd be interested in the Fallout lore, but I don't think I'd be of any help in those episodes.
Yeah, we could always, we would figure that out as we move along, but I think that transitioning some kind of like lore podcasts or something like that would be good to hold us over in the meantime until The Boys comes out. I know we're also going to be both watching House of the Dragon, but I believe a few other podcasts that are sort of related to us, like the Lorehounds, are going to be doing weekly coverage of House of the Dragon. I know that Anthony and Steve over at Properly Howard, they're not doing it on Properly Howard, but I believe that they are going to be covering it on their own. So we'll have to figure that out. It's definitely something I would like to talk about, but I don't know if doing weekly coverage alongside The Boys would really be feasible.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely want to do coverage of The Boys, and I think that we kind of talked to the Lorehounds a little bit about it.
For sure. I mean, either way, we're going to be doing coverage of it, and then we'll have them possibly on as guests in a couple episodes if the scheduling works out for that. For House of the Dragon, I don't know. I definitely don't think that we'll have time to do The Boys episode by episode and then House of the Dragon. So maybe doing something sort of similar to how we've done Fallout, like every 3 weeks, we would do it like maybe an episode 1 through 3 sort of recap. And because it's only going to be 8 episodes this season.
Yeah, I mean, I think since the Lorehounds are going to be doing full coverage of it, we could just do like a mid-season like checkup and then like a end of season final review.
Yeah, that's a good idea. I think that that should be what we stick with for that, just to not overload people's feeds with House of the Dragon. People are going to have more than enough coverage to listen to every week. So yeah, I think that's a good place for us to be right now. In terms of scheduling, that's sort of where we're looking. If anyone has any ideas of things that they'd like to be covered,
yeah, please let us know.
Yeah, obviously we can't guarantee that we will or won't watch and cover any of the things that are suggested, but just getting a feel for what you guys would like to hear from us next, We would love that. So send us in some feedback. We'll talk a little bit later about how to do that. For announcements, I think that's all we have. We're going to move on to our listener feedback section. The majority of our listener feedback has come from the Discord over at the Lorehounds Discord server. We have some messages from there. We've got a couple emails as well. So let's get right into it. I will read off our first email here. It comes from Robert. Robert says, episode one, at the birthday party, a guy in the crowd mumbles that the cowboy slash ghoul character has to pay alimony. So he got divorced before the bombs fell. Daughter was with him outside so she could be a ghoul in Vegas. Ghoul character and wife was probably part of the group of scientists that got frozen in Vault 31 along with Lucy's dad, Moldaver, Betty, and Eyepatch. Moldaver was a scientist, but was also head of the communists who realized Vault Tech were up to no good. And after they unfroze her, she started the resistance and converted Lucy's mom. In an effort to get her back, Lucy's dad dropped another nuke and destroyed the city. I think for most of that, that's a good synopsis of what happened. The only thing that I would disagree with there is that Moldaver and the ghoul's wife were in Vault 31 as well. I think that they...
Yeah, I think they were frozen somewhere else for sure, too.
Yeah, I don't know what's going... or what happened with Moldaver.
Well, because all of the people in Vault 31 were Bud Askin's buds, right? That was that whole, like, plot line, I'm pretty sure, was... He was talking about how he, like, tried to equivocate him training the buds to raising a kid, I think, when he was talking to Cooper at one point. But yeah, all the people frozen in 31 were, like, his buds, which were basically just all personal trained assistants for Vault-Tec. So yeah, I think there's probably, like, another vault that... What was I going to say? Another vault that Cooper's wife was frozen in, and I don't know... what happened to the kid. I mean, it would make sense if she was also a ghoul, right? Because of if Cooper's they were together. So, like, unless Cooper, like, brought her to his wife and she got her into the vault but didn't let Cooper in, or Cooper refused to go in or something like that, I don't know.
I actually have almost that exact thing written in my theories for season two. I think that the ghoul and his daughter pulled up to whatever vault they were supposed to be in, the, like, special management vault. And, you know, I think that the wife and daughter were let in and Cooper was not allowed in. And that's why he became a ghoul.
I have one more theory that's a little more outlandish, though, is that they both got hit by the radiation, but he still got his daughter to the vault, and, like, his wife is, like, took her away and is, like, experimenting, like, trying to, like, reverse the effects.
Yeah, I wonder, maybe he was in the vault for a time and that's where he became a ghoul. We hear people at Vault-Tec saying how time is the greatest asset. It's the greatest weapon. Maybe in sort of a way to make themselves have some more longevity, or, I don't know, just live longer for the sake of ruling over the wasteland. Maybe they experimented on Cooper and that's how he became this sort of special ghoul that we see.
Maybe.
That one's maybe a little bit more far-fetched, but...
I feel like what we've seen from the show is, like, I know how at first we thought he was a special ghoul, but I think what we've seen from the show is he's like every other ghoul. It's just the fact that he actually is able to keep getting the vials because of his skill set.
That's true. Yeah, we're still not sure if he originally took the vials and that's how he became a ghoul, because that's how Thaddeus becomes a ghoul in the end of this series, is he takes whatever vials from... the snake oil salesman, I guess we're going to call him the chicken fucker.
No, the chicken fucker is a better title, I feel like.
I've been playing Fallout Shelter, and I unlocked that character, and they name him as the snake oil salesman, but I think chicken fucker is definitely a better name for him. But yeah, I don't know if the ghoul became that way because of that, or if it was the bombs dropping. There's just so many unanswered questions about that plot line, and I just know we're going to get more flashbacks in season two to answer those questions.
Yeah, well, I mean, we got so many flashbacks in season one that, I mean, there's no way they do us dirty in season two and leave all of those questions unanswered.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, moving on to our next bit of feedback. From Sub-Zero over on the Discord, I pulled a few messages from Sub-Zero. Just finished the season last night, and I think they did a wonderful job to stick the landing. The story was so intricately written. When it all pays off at the end, you look back on early episodes and start recognizing all the clues they dropped along the way. As a non-gamer, I never felt once like I was missing context or having an inferior viewing experience just because I didn't play the game. They often upended conventional sci-fi tropes. You're never quite sure who the good guys are, and the quirky humor is so on point and smartly applied.
I want to say I feel exactly the same way as him. I think that as not a Fallout enthusiast, I would say, just someone who thinks it's a cool series, cool games, never played any, I really did not feel excluded from the experience. I enjoyed it every step of the way. I felt that the characters were very humanized. You know, what Sub-Zero said about you're never quite sure who the good guys are. I really feel that I agree with that, because there's a lot of characters who end up doing not so great things because they're in terrible, shitty, poo-poo situations, you know? Like, I mean, Maximus, for example, he does do a lot of shitty things, but one thing is when they're in Vault 4 and he starts flipping tables, beating on Vault dwellers because he thinks they're about to execute Lucy, you know? There's a lot of moments like that in the show, I feel like, where people are trying to do the best for what they think the situation is.
Yeah, I would agree with that assessment. I think that, you know, I don't think that there's any good guys necessarily in Fallout. I think that there's bad guys, and then there's downright evil guys. Like, no one who's surviving the apocalypse is really, it's hard to be a good person. Everyone is a murderer or some other.
I mean, yeah, we could take Moldaver, for example. Like, what she was trying to do is technically good, but she also had to, like, massacre a bunch of innocent vault dwellers for it.
Yeah, and that's kind of the story of Fallout, is people having to make those hard decisions of, all right, I want to help people, but at the same time, I have to do these awful things to get there, and is it really worth it in the end? As the consumers of the media, I guess that's up to us to decide whether or not these things are worth it and whether or not the ends justify the means.
Yeah. All right, I think we can read out the next one of Sub-Zero's messages.
Yes, the next one of Sub-Zero's messages. Until Norm went into Vault 31, it never even occurred to me that Vault-Tec had their people in stasis and figured out a way to control the future by periodically reviving them. Usually at least halfway through a season, you already have a pretty solid idea of where everything is going. I had no clue, and it was absolute genius.
Yeah, honestly, I completely agree here. I didn't even know they had stasis pods in Fallout. I mean, I'm sure that was in the games. I thought that my theory for that was that they were just having them train them specifically to be overseers and follow the Vault-Tec code or whatever, you know. But I think this was a much more interesting twist.
Yeah, I would agree. And to go off of your thing about whether or not the stasis pods were in the games, so this is going to be a pretty major spoiler for Fallout 4 if you haven't played it, but the way that your main character survives the apocalypse, they enter Vault 111 and them, their wife, and their kid are put into these cryopods, and the main character wakes up over 200 years later as the only survivor of this cryopod situation and the only one to have gotten out of it. So this is a thing in the Fallout world, but I didn't expect them to use it here, so I was caught off guard by it too, and I honestly really loved it. All right. Moving on to the final message from Sub-Zero that we included in our feedback today. I don't know if this was intentional or not, but I found Max to be thoroughly unlikable and an annoying character. He is petty, selfish, and a borderline imbecile. He makes rash decisions with no thought on consequences. I have no idea why Lucy likes him so much. The way things ended with Max, where he's getting undeservedly credited with killing Moldaver, I could see him becoming a semi-villain in Season 2, or at least for a portion of the season until he gets, quote, redeemed.
Yeah, I think me and Aaron kind of talked about this a lot throughout the pod, is that we just don't like Max. He kind of had a slow, minimal redemption arc at the end, but I think he's still deep in negative, bad person territory. Not a good dude. Doesn't break the cycle of being an asshole to your squire. Like, he's just not great. I do agree with you. I think he's, in season two, he's gonna be a conflicted villain. He doesn't want to do harm to Lucy. He probably doesn't want to get in the way of her revenge against her dad or whatever it is. But at the same time, I feel that the glory of the Brotherhood is gonna cloud his decisions. The power is gonna get to his head, blow it up like a damn blimp on his shoulders. I'm getting the same feeling as you, Sub-Zero. I feel like this guy's, he's gonna be a villain in season two, I think, until, I'm guessing he's probably gonna, like, sacrifice himself or get, basically exile himself from the Brotherhood to, like, help Lucy out at the end of the season or something.
I thought that season one would end with him there, where he's exiling himself from the Brotherhood or leaving the Brotherhood, but it seems like his desire for power and fitting in has kind of overtaken what I thought his character was gonna, or what direction I thought his character was gonna go in.
Yeah, I thought at the end, when, like, you know, when Hank, like, punches him with the power armor and he gets knocked out, I thought Lucy was gonna be able to, like, wake him up before she leaves with the ghoul, but no. So, yeah.
Yeah, I thought it would be the three of them going off to whatever was next for them, but I think that this is just as interesting to see how Max is gonna fit in. Especially now that there's going to be this new Brotherhood faction that the Elder Cleric is creating, or at least that's what it seems like he's doing, is creating his own Brotherhood faction.
I mean, I think it's honestly more interesting that Maximus is like this. I think it's more in line with his character. He is a treacherous guy, you know? Dane proved that he didn't actually put the razor blades in their boot, but, you know, Maximus also proved that if it wasn't Dane, it might have been him, you know? Like, he was happy it happened. Like, Maximus has proved, like, he's a treacherous guy. Killed his knight, or not killed, but let his knight die before him, you know? Stole the power core from Vault 4. He almost kept it.
If Lucy hadn't been there to be the angel on his shoulder, he would have kept that power core.
Yeah. So without Lucy, it's just the devil on his shoulder.
And we know that he's going to be high up now in the Brotherhood, and he was tasked before Moldaver died. Moldaver told him to try and change the Brotherhood from the inside. I just don't see him having that kind of influence or ability to do that within the Brotherhood, even being a knight now. I don't think he can do that.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like he really has to go to great lengths in season two to really get some more standing and respect before he can try and change anything, if that's even the path he takes.
Yeah, because even if the Brotherhood makes him a knight, which that seems to be the pretty clear path for him in season two, he's still the guy who let his knight die, didn't tell anyone, might have put razor blades in a boot. Like, just every single thing about him is untrustworthy, and his brothers and sisters in arms don't think they trust him. The only reason why the Elder is giving him any sort of responsibility or trust is because he thinks he can use Maximus as sort of a sword for him to swing around and point at people and be like, go get him, you know?
Yeah, the most trustworthy Maximus has ever been is when he literally took the heat for Thaddeus and Lucy and then immediately was like, oh, actually, I can get the head for you. Don't kill me. when he gets there, so.
Yeah, he did straight up lie to the Brotherhood about having the head, and then I don't know why, even at the end of the season, I don't know why they trusted him to be like, okay, we'll believe you that you know where the head is. If I were the Brotherhood, I would have executed him and been like, that idiot doesn't know where the head is.
They just keep giving this fucker chances. Bro has a level 10 luck stat.
He really does. He's got all luck and no charisma. He's specced into nothing else on his special stats. Do you want to read out Pawson 20's message from Discord?
They said, finished season one of Fallout, and as someone who's never played the games, I thought it was really good. I love the world building with the vaults, Brotherhood, ghouls, and others. There's an overarching mystery which gets resolved at the end, which was fascinating. I do wonder how Moldaver survived for so long, and Hank didn't recognize her in the first episode. Ella Purnell is great as Lucy, really love the ghoul too, and his backstory was really interesting. Wasn't a fan of Maximus initially, but he later grew on me. Action scenes are really good too, and some stuff are super violent. I do think this show would have benefited being weekly, even though I loved binging it. Maybe Amazon would make it weekly from season two, just like with The Boys. I agree. I think weekly is just so much better than the binge model, especially for a show where every episode is an hour long, too. I think the binge model makes more sense for a more long-form content show. Like, when a show has 24 episodes, I don't want to spend 24 weeks watching it. But when a show is, like, 8 episodes and each episode is an hour long, like, I just rather it be weekly so I don't, like, watch episode 1 and then be like, okay, I'm gonna go to episode 2 now and then get, like, 20 minutes into it and be like, oh, this is really long, actually.
Yeah, I think I mentioned this a few weeks ago or whenever we recorded our episodes 1 through 3 podcast, that I really like having a show to look forward to every week. I think it's really fun. That's just my personal opinion on it, though.
I don't know if you agree with me, but like when a show is like 24 episodes long or like one of the longer seasons of a show, like I don't know if I'm going to be able to keep on like the week by week. But like when a show is like 10, 12 episodes, you know, like I'll definitely be there every week to watch it. I'll be happy. I think it's a good way to like space it out and let you take a breath between each episode.
I think that for serious dramas like this, the week to week works really well. When it comes to something like, I've been watching Abbott Elementary, which is a comedy show on Hulu, and I think it's on Fox. I really prefer the binge model for a comedy because I just want to like sit in bed and watch 5 episodes at a time before I go to sleep or something like that. You know, I think that, like you said, the 24 episode seasons where each episode is 20 minutes sort of comedy model is really good for the binge. And then a show like this would be so much better for week to week coverage.
And I mean, it would let us do shorter and more frequent podcasts, you know, like we could do a 30 minute episode every week or something rather than every week we're doing an hour long episode covering 3 episodes.
Yeah, absolutely. And Pawson 20 said that they might give it the Boys treatment where it was just season 1 that is going to be binge and then the rest is going to be week to week. I had no idea that The Boys season 1 was a binge model. I don't think I knew that.
I didn't know that either. I mean, I started watching The Boys not when it like originally aired. I watched it after it got some hype on YouTube and my brother watched it. So yeah.
Yeah, I don't think I started watching The Boys until maybe midway through season 2. So anyways, we're getting off topic here. Let's move on to our final piece of feedback for this episode. This one's a little bit different.
Wait. I want to go back to Pawson's.
Okay, let's go back.
I agree with the Ella Purnell take. I think she did a great job as Lucy. Really good American accent for Lucy. For those that don't know, I think Ella Purnell is from the UK.
Yes, I believe so.
Also, wasn't a fan of Max. I'm going to keep reiterating this. I really don't like Maximus's character. I think he's a good character, but he's a bad guy. I think the character is really well written. I think the actor does a great job playing Maximus. But yeah, I think Maximus is a douchebag. Action scenes were great, yes. And I do think the overarching mystery was fascinating.
Yeah, absolutely. Not to beat a dead horse, but yeah, Maximus was insufferable for many of the episodes. But not in a bad way, in the way that, oh god, I really hate this character and I want him to either get better or get some comeuppance for what he's been doing. And are we ready to move on to our final piece of feedback?
He's our number one fan. Let's everyone give a drum roll. to Kevin Youngblood.
Kevin contacted us via the contact form and was the first person to send us feedback, either through email or contact form. When Kevin sent us this feedback, he said, "I listened and was disappointed that you all hadn't played the games. All of the in-game lore is tongue-in-cheek. It is not a serious look at the Fall Games F Civilization. From your review of the first three episodes, I've gathered that you don't have an understanding of the games going back to the Wastelands game, the origin of the Fallout lore. Fallout is a hilarious interpretation of how capitalism fucked the future of mankind. I'm going to listen just to compare my knowledge."
I mean, I don't think that we missed the point about Fallout being a kind of talking piece about how hypercapitalism ruins a country or even the world. But I mean, I don't really think we want to get political at all on this podcast. You know, we're just here to have fun. We're just here to enjoy a series, talk about what we liked about it. I don't think we're here for any serious conversation. So, yeah. And also, I think the whole thing, Kevin, man, like, I feel like I made it pretty clear. I didn't play the games, and I feel like that's my whole standing here on the podcast. You know, Aaron's the expert, and I'm the fresh newcomer.
Well, I haven't played the Wastelands game, so I guess I'm not an expert in some sense of the matter. I don't know that I would necessarily classify myself as an expert otherwise either. I have played all of the main Fallout games, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, and New Vegas. I get where you're coming from here about the Wastelands game being the origin of Fallout, but at the end of the day, it's not Fallout. So I don't think that it's all that important to understanding the Fallout lore. I do think that it would provide some extra context, maybe, or give a few little Easter eggs or insights, but yeah, at the end of the day, Fallout is Fallout, and Wastelands is the inspiration for it. So I don't feel that I'm missing out on too much by not knowing about it.
But thank you for your support, Kevin. It was good to know you've been listening the whole time.
Yeah, and you said you were going to listen just to compare your knowledge. Even though we're not going to be doing any more feedback for this, send us an email, let us know how we did, tell us everything that we got wrong, got right, and we'll respond to you. So thanks for writing in and for listening, Kevin. We hope that you got at least a little bit of enjoyment out of our season.
Clearly enough to leave us an email.
Yep. So would you like to move on to our final sort of wrap up and theories on the next season? We've been sort of talking about this as we've gone through some listener feedback, but I've got a few more theories to talk about before we wrap up. And I don't know, do you also have a couple theories of where you think season two is going to go?
Honestly, I really don't, because I know that you corrected me saying the like end city that Hank saw was New Vegas. So because of that, I really don't have any theories since I didn't play the games. I don't know like anything about any of the New Vegas lore. So, I mean, I know my only thing is that Lucy and the ghoul are probably going to track Hank down to New Vegas and they're going to run into a bunch of shenanigans there, but that's it.
Yeah, I definitely think so. One of my theories for this season is I don't think that Vault-Tec headquarters are in Vegas. I think that Vegas might just be a pit stop for Hank along the way. Or maybe he's trying to find information. It's entirely possible that he doesn't know where the big wigs at Vault-Tec are. Like, he's been frozen in the whole Bud's Buds thing. We don't have any reason to believe that Bud Askins and his Tri-Vault situation are in any way connected to the other vaults. It seems like each vault operates pretty independently of each other.
Yeah, true. I mean, you hear Barb talking about it, Cooper's wife, how, like, every investor gets to basically buy their own vault to do whatever they want with. So I'm assuming the Trio vault is just a vault that Bud basically owns, and that's his little, like, science experiment, you know? His Bud's controlling the two vaults.
It's going to be interesting to see where we go with that, because I really don't think that Vault 31 has any kind of contact with corporate. We don't know even if corporate is still around. Wherever Barb is, if Barb's even still around, and her friends at the higher echelons of Vault Tech, we really have no idea if they're even survivors. I'm sure that they wouldn't set up the ghoul looking for his family if he wasn't going to find out something significant about them being still alive or something, but I don't know. It just still hasn't been confirmed whether or not they're even around.
Yeah.
So another one of my theories here is I think that with the Elder Cleric's new faction of the Brotherhood that he's making, I think that we're going to see maybe a civil war in the Brotherhood. Not even so much as like his chapter is going to be at war with the other chapters. I think that when he goes off and does his own thing, not everyone is going to agree with it. And it's going to be him and his loyalists against people maybe like Dane or some of the other knights who don't agree with this whole new philosophy. But then again, the Brotherhood is very brainwashed into just saluting and following orders. So it's still possible that maybe the majority of them are going to go along with what happens here.
Yeah, I agree with you there.
I also, this isn't so much a theory as it is just something that I'm wondering and hoping that they're going to answer very early next season. What is the scope exactly of this cold fusion reactor? Like, how far does this power? We see the whole city light up, but is it like the whole state of California? Is it just LA? Like, I didn't get a good idea.
They say like infinite energy. Isn't that literally what they said?
They did, but I just find that hard to believe, you know? I mean, I guess if they said it, that's what they're going with, but yeah, I don't know. I have some doubts about the whole unlimited energy thing. I feel like nothing can be completely unlimited, right?
Yeah, but it is fiction, so...
That's very true. We don't have power armor in real life either.
Yeah.
So, the Brotherhood's definitely going to be taking advantage of anyone who wants to access the power in clean water. I think that they're going to be controlling where this power goes. As soon as they roll in, I think they're going to start shutting off areas where the power reaches and like, going off to do control, like, controlled areas. I don't know where I'm going with that, but you get what I mean. They're just going to try and take every opportunity to try and boost recruitment, tax people. I don't know. They're going to take advantage of the situation.
Yeah.
One of the big things I saw was people were complaining about the fact that Thaddeus still looks human when he's supposedly like a ghoul. As someone who hasn't played Fallout or don't really know about that process, what were your thoughts on when they said he was a ghoul?
I mean, you see when he pulls out the arrow, the places where he's been injured, like, heal over and look like ghoul skin.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like that doesn't really bother me. I mean, it's like as he sustains more injuries throughout his, like, life and that heals over, he's going to become more ghoul looking.
Yeah, and that was always the impression that I got, is ghouls didn't look like that when they first started becoming ghouls, and that radiation burns or other injuries just kind of turned them that way, but I guess we never got official confirmation of that in the games or whatever, so even though that was my assumption, it seems like some people are disagreeing with that, and that when you're a ghoul, you just kind of become like a zombie. But I like the way that they handled it. Everything that they did with ghouls has kind of built upon the existing lore in a way that I thought was interesting. So
yeah, I mean, I feel like, to me, it makes more sense that it's a slow transformation, you know, like, you're hit with all this radiation, and it, like, corrupts your body, basically, but, like, you don't just instantly wake up, and your whole body is, like, ghoulish, and your nose is falling off, and, like, everything, like, I mean, that, it makes more sense to me for it to be, like, a, as you sustain injuries, you look like Deadpool. Like, I don't know. Maybe other people will see it differently, but that's how I see it.
I would agree with that. I think that it makes a lot more sense this way. I personally enjoy the slow burn of, maybe we'll see Thaddeus show up for a little cameo next season and he'll be completely ghoulified. Yeah, that would be kind of fun to see that progression. The next lore inconsistency, or just sort of change that they made, was the squires in the show are all full adults, right? We don't see any children as squires.
I mean, I assume they're all adults, but none of the ages are ever revealed.
In the games, all the squires are full-on children, like 12 years old.
Oh my god.
Yeah, when you get assigned to a knight, you're like, you're a little kid, and you start going on missions with them when you're a little kid. Kind of more like squires in medieval Europe, where you would send your little kid off to go and squire for a knight. Yeah, so that was an interesting change they made. I kind of enjoyed that change. It makes the Brotherhood a little bit less cruel to not be sending out 12-year-olds into the wasteland without any power armor, without much protection. So that was a change I appreciated.
Yeah.
Was it just me, or when they showed New Vegas at the very end, did it kind of look abandoned to you?
Yeah, I mean, it was daytime, so I know what you said about the neon lights, but maybe that's why they weren't on or something like that. I don't know. Or not daytime, but like it was still light outside. Mm-hmm. So like maybe that's why. I don't know. I mean, but I think the fact that all the buildings were like basically still standing, all the walls were up, is going to go to show that like it's still running in some manner.
There's a couple of theories that I have. If New Vegas is actually abandoned or has fallen, there's a few really interesting ways that that could have happened. First, I'm going to go in order of what I think is the least interesting to the most interesting here. The NCR could have rolled in before their end, and that could have been the way it happened. I don't think the NCR would have managed Vegas very well. They could have gotten nuked like the NCR did. They also could have been the victims of Caesar's Legion, which is this faction that exists in Arizona and New Mexico, or at least existed. I don't think that they're around anymore. But there is one final theory of what could have happened to Vegas if it's gone, and that is the tunnelers.
I keep seeing TikToks about that.
So in Fallout New Vegas, spoilers for Fallout New Vegas's Lonesome Road DLC. Basically, your main character, Courier 6, goes off to this place called the Divide. Now, the Divide recently had nukes go off, and you travel through there to try and figure out what happened, and you eventually go through all these audio messages. You come across these creatures called the Tunnelers, which are these humanoid creatures that have been living underground basically since the bombs dropped. They're like irradiated, I'm assuming humans, who have developed glowing eyes and just lived underground. Now, when the Hopeville Divide nukes went off, it disturbed the Tunnelers underground, and they started to come to the surface. One of the main characters in this DLC, Ulysses, tells the Courier that within a decade or so, the Tunnelers are going to have spread across the entire Mojave Wasteland and come up and destroy everything with the rate that they're spreading. If that remains true in the series, it would make sense that New Vegas is gone because of the Tunnelers. Do you have any thought? I know that you haven't played the game, so you probably don't have too much to say about this, but would that be something you would be interested in seeing, is this sort of ruined Vegas that's been destroyed by these humanoid mutant creatures?
I mean, I guess it would be interesting, but I think it would be more interesting to see what remains of Vegas, like, as an actual city, you know?
And it's also worth mentioning that Bethesda Game Studios didn't really want to pick an ending for Fallout New Vegas. They didn't want to pick one canon ending, so they tried to avoid leaning in any one direction when they made this Fallout series. But if they're going to Vegas in Season 2, they kind of have to pick an ending, because any one of the endings that happens in Fallout New Vegas is pretty instrumental to who controls Vegas, who's still alive. So if they plan on making that a focal point, they will have to make a decision.
I mean, for all we know, the Tunnelers are going to start attacking Vegas when they get there.
That's true. There's just so many unanswered questions, so many interesting ways that they can go with this. Another thing that people have sort of been saying online doesn't add up is when the bombs dropped on Shady Sands. People are saying that it doesn't really make sense. Fallout New Vegas happens in 2281. We don't get an exact date of when the Shady Sands bombs drop, but Fallout on Prime takes place in 2296, so that's 15 years after Fallout New Vegas. I think that's a pretty sufficient window of time for the nukes to have dropped. You know, Maximus seems like he's about maybe 10, 11 years old when the bombs drop on Shady Sands. Would you agree with that?
I mean, I thought he looked more like he was like fucking 9 or 8 or whatever. But.
Yeah, so even going with like 8 or 9, that would put him in his early, like, yeah, sort of early 20s at the time.
I mean, yeah, I guess that timeline does make sense.
Yeah, I don't think that it doesn't confuse me too much, personally. I think that if Fallout New Vegas takes place in 2281, the very earliest the bombs could have dropped was late 2281 after the events of New Vegas, which in all likelihood it could have been then. So I don't know, nothing about that particularly bothered me.
I mean, the timeline does make sense because what, Lucy is 22, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I mean, if the bombs basically dropped when she was probably like fucking, I don't know, like 10 maybe. Because her mom abducted her, and then her dad re-abducted her. I mean, that timeline makes sense to me.
She had to have been pretty young when all that happened.
Yeah.
If she doesn't remember any of it.
Yeah, true. Probably like fucking 5 or something. But that timeline still makes sense to me.
Yeah, I think so too. I think it makes sense. And we only saw the Enclave for a really brief period of time at the beginning of episode 2. And I wonder if they're going to fit in more in season 2 or if they're just going to stay in the background like they were in season 1. Do you have any thoughts on if they might use them more, if they might become the bigger villains of the series? I don't know. I'd love to hear what you think.
I can only assume they're going to show up again, considering they were trying to get that Wilzig guy again. Like, I mean, they literally posted up a fucking wanted what they put like a bounty on him, so I mean, I'm assuming they're gonna be in conflict with the Brotherhood for the cold fusion thing.
We mentioned last episode that we both think that there's still other Enclave, or not Enclave, NCR remnants out there, so we might see this kind of three-way war between whatever's left of the NCR, whatever's left of the Enclave, and this new faction of the Brotherhood, which all seem to be in relatively similar states of not having a ton of resources. So whoever ends up with that final say or final control over the cold fusion technology, they're going to be the ones who come out on top. It seems pretty crucial for any of them going forward to stay alive as an organization.
Yeah.
All right. As far as my theories, which there were quite a few of them, I think that's it for me. Do you have any final thoughts before we wrap up here?
No.
All right. Yeah, this has been a really great season of television. To everyone who's been listening along with us, thank you guys so much for joining us along on this ride. This is our first time ever doing a podcast, and the amount of support you guys have shown has just been incredible. We love you guys so much, and we hope that you stick with us as we continue to cover a few other shows. We'll definitely be back for Fallout Season 2. That's the other piece of news. I don't think we mentioned this, but Amazon Prime Video has renewed Fallout for Season 2.
Yeah, so we will be back for Season 2, of course.
All right, and without further ado, Chase, take us into how people can get a hold of us.
Even though this season of Fallout is over, we have coverage of other series, movies, and games coming soon, and we would love to hear from you guys. So there are a few ways to get in touch with us and send us feedback. First being email, which is fallout@thelorehounds.com. We also have our Discord channel set up for the Radioactive Ramblings within the Lorehounds Discord server, where you can send us a message or chat about the show with each other. You can also use our contact form or leave us a voicemail by going to thelorehounds.com, and please leave us a rating on Apple Podcasts. It helps other listeners like you find us.
Yes, and also, we have a Twitter account now where we will be posting some updates on where we're going to be going with our coverage, what shows we'll have, also updating on when those episodes drop. So if you want to give us a follow over there and interact with us, we are at Radioactive141. Feel free to tweet us and definitely be responding, and we would love to have a conversation with you there as well as on the Discord. So that's probably the quickest way to get a hold of us if you have a more short form question or just feedback for us, or just want to be involved in the conversation. Now, without further ado, we are proud members of the Barovian Podcasting Network, a podcasting network run by the Lorehounds. Let's talk for a minute about the shows that we're affiliated with. Rings and Rituals is a show that covers season one of the Rings of Power through the lens of ritual. It's hosted by longtime Lorehounds friend Marilyn R. Pukila and Dr. Sarah Brown of Signum University. They're also looking at the bigger Tolkien legendarium and looking at ritual in our daily lives. They've got podcasts out now with new episodes coming every other week, and their 9-episode season started in March. Over at Woolshift Dust, Alicia is currently covering Beacon 23 Season 2, which is streaming on MGM Plus. Alicia has an interview coming up with author Hugh Howey and has also done a deep dive into the background of Dune. So check out Wool Shift Dust for all of those podcasts. Properly Howard Movie Review just started up with their new season. Their new season theme is Felonies and Fugazis, where they're going to be looking at some crime movies, and they're just overall a really good time. Anthony is an academic. Steve is a stand-up comic. They rate movies on a scale of better or worse than a Ron Howard film, so they're really funny. Check them out. And last but certainly not least, the Lorehounds, our parent podcast, are currently covering Shogun on FX and Hulu. They are teaming up with Alicia from Woolshift Dust to do some coverage. They've got episode by episode coverage every week. If you're listening to this episode when it comes out, they will have their season finale out shortly, and after that they'll have a season wrap-up with feedback. On that season wrap-up, they're going to have a special guest, Nathan Ledbetter, a PhD candidate and member of the East Asian Studies Department at Princeton. And as always, all of this information can be found in the show notes. Thank you guys so much for listening, and we will see you in the next podcast.